Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
$1 billion people live on less than $1 a day. Even though we're in an economic downturn, we're 100 times more than that in America.
Anybody can make a difference. This is not the work only for governments. It's not the work only of the United Nations or organizations like World Vision, that any person can make a difference.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
My, my. That is a gift.
Failure is not an option.
Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.
Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. A very special guest in studio today, Rich Stearns. He's the president of World Vision. We're talking about what does God expect of us. He's been the president of World Vision for a number of years now. Before that, he was the president of Parker Brothers, vice president of the Franklin Mint. And right before World Vision, he was the president CEO of Lennox Incorporated. It's great to have you with us today. What a pleasure.
Great to be here, Jim.
Well, you know, you have a background from Cornell University in neurobiology. You have an MBA from Wharton School, University of Pennsylvania, incredible schools. You've been married to Renee and have five children. But the truth is you have quite a story of moving from kind of the business world, all these incredible resume points, to working with the poor. What happened?
Well, I like to think that God is still chuckling over my career path. And when I speak to young people, I often say, you know, when you get that question, what do you want to be when you grow up? That's an annoying question that adults ask young people, and they don't usually know the answer. And I say, I hope you take some encouragement from my resume, because as you said, I went from neurobiology to marketing to running a toy company, running a fine tableware company, and now to World Vision. But in my life, I've seen an amazing pattern of the hand of God leading me through different experiences, really in a way that prepared me for what I would eventually find at World Vision. I've now been at World Vision going on 11 years, and I've seen how all of my business experiences and training have really been able to be put to use for the kingdom in hopefully positive and powerful ways.
You know, you're a founder of World Vision. Bob Pierce and I respect and admire World Vision as much as any organization in the world. He said, "Let my heart break with the things that break the heart of God," or someplace close to that. How has your heart broken over these years of being the president of World Vision?
Well, it is heartbreaking. I remember being interviewed for this job and was reluctant to leave my corporate career to take this job. And one of the board members who interviewed me was Bill Hybels. And Bill asked me the question. He said, "Rich, you know, if you're offered this job and you become the president of World Vision, you're going to see some heartbreaking things. You're going to go to garbage dumps where children are living. You're going to see mothers holding dying children in their arms in the middle of a famine zone. You're going to sit at the deathbed of an AIDS patient." He said, "Are you comfortable with this?" And I said, "Comfortable?" I said, "I am so uncomfortable with this. I'm breaking out in hives right now, Bill." I said, "I am very uncomfortable with that. Who wants their heart broken in that way, in such a graphic way?" And I said, "Don't get me wrong." I said, I cry at Disney movies. I'm a very emotional person, but I have a tender heart, and I'm apprehensive about that. And that was one of my great apprehensions in coming to World Vision. Would I be able to handle that? You know, in fact, the first year on the job, I think every time I addressed the employees, I cried. And my wife called me the crying president of World Vision. Because when you see these things, and most Americans are insulated from it, but when you actually have to go and sit in that mud hut with that woman who's lost a child, it is devastating. And it enters your heart in a way that changes you forever.
Now, what was interesting is that you have that feel of walking into a mud hut. And at the same time, just as you were approaching the presidency, there was a Friday, I believe, in the afternoon where you were so depressed because you were actually crawling into bed in the hotel, wondering if you should really take this job. So there was a real dichotomy going on in your life.
That was not my proudest moment. In the process that led to the board of directors of World Vision offering me this job, God was really doing a lot of work with me and in my heart, because it was one of those things, you know, which do I choose? Choose this day who you will serve. You know, will I hold on to my corporate career and what appeared to be security? You know, a lot of my friends were saying, "You're nuts to leave the CEO job at Lennox and to go out to this ministry that you know nothing about, and you'll probably fail, and you'll commit career suicide, and you're moving your five kids and selling your house. I mean, people thought I was nuts. And it was a real struggle with God, a spiritual struggle between God and the evil one for my heart. And that day, I had been told by the board that I was their choice, and I had an opportunity to go to Seattle, where World Vision's offices are, and talk to a number of the leaders. And as I talked to them during the day, my spirit sank lower and lower as I realized the things I would have to face at World Vision. It was just an overwhelming responsibility. And so that day, I went back to the hotel, and my wife and teenage son were there with me because they were looking at homes and neighborhoods. And I literally crawled into bed at my wit's end, saying, I just need to be alone with God. And I was crying and praying and essentially praying, Lord, take this cup from me. I mean, it's a little dramatic when I look back at it and kind of pathetic. But this was a real battle, because I remember saying to God, anything but this, not the poor, not the sick, not the broken. I don't want to go to those places, Lord. Send me to Focus on the Family. Send me to Campus Crusade for Christ. Send me somewhere else. I'll go. But I was very apprehensive about entering the pain of the poor.
11 years later, what's it like for you?
Well, it's turned out to be the greatest joy in my life. And it always is when you follow the Lord's leading and you follow His will for your life instead of your own plan. It's always a better decision. 11 years later, I now see what He saw when He led me in this direction. And you know, that verse in Jeremiah, I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you, not to harm you. That turned out to be so true. And I tell people I've had an experience over the last 10 years that a billionaire could not buy. I've traveled to 40 to 50 countries, and I see the things that tourists never see. You know, I get into the communities, into the homes of the people. I hear their stories. I hear their pain. But I also have the joy of seeing the difference that we can make in the lives of people. And, you know, children vaccinated, girls freed from trafficking, children freed from bonded labor, water wells coming in like gushers with the community dancing with joy around the water coming into their community. They'd never had clean water. And 30% of their children die before their fifth birthday because of the water situation. I've seen crops in the field. I've seen clinics built and schools built and children that weren't able to go to school now going to school. So I've been able to see the amazing triumph of the human spirit when an organization like World Vision, supported by faithful people that want to make a difference in the world, when we get involved, and magic can happen, and God uses that in ways that are transformative. So it has been a tremendous blessing. I look back on it, and I think I almost turned the wrong way and didn't have this experience.
It's interesting. You quoted John Ortberg, who's one of my great friends, saying that a career is something I do for myself. A calling is something I do for God. And this has been your calling, hasn't it?
Well, I really believe it has been my calling. And I would say that prior to coming to World Vision, I wasn't even sure if I believed in calling. You know, I saw that in the Bible, people were called. David was called. Peter and Andrew were called from their fishing nets. And I kind of thought of it as, well, that was the kind of thing that happened back in the day, you know. But today, calling is just another word for being a Christian in whatever you're doing. And yet, through the experiences I had 10 years ago, I really felt a profound supernatural calling on my life that God had this for me. And I know not everyone feels it in such an acute way as I did at that time. But I now really believe that God does call us. And He might call others to be in the business world or to be a homemaker or to be a teacher. He doesn't call everyone into full-time Christian service, but calling is a real thing.
That's so important. We're going to have to take a break. We'll be right back. Rich Stearns with us, president of World Vision. What a privilege to have him in studio today.
Well, it certainly is, Jim. And thinking about what he's written about in his book, The Hole in Our Gospel, really gets all of us thinking about ways that we can be more proactive and looking at the world differently, not focusing so much on just our inconvenience problems here in the U.S., but thinking a little more globally. And it's so important for us as families. As a matter of fact, I was thinking about a couple of tip sheets that we have in our online resource center about encouraging our kids to think about mission trips and outreaches and just basically getting the focus off of themselves and getting the focus off of ourselves and onto the needs of others. When you visit our online resource center today at homeward.com, HOMEWORD.com, you'll find those resources. Hit the articles and media button, and that'll take you right to our collection of tip sheets and articles and video clips and some audio clips too. Everything you find in the articles and media section, by the way, is available without cost, thanks to your prayers and faithful financial support of this ministry. So if you're looking for some tips for getting your kids involved in mission work, getting them outside of themselves here in their Western American mindset and into a more global perspective, visit our online resource center today at HOMEWORD.com. Welcome back. I'm Jim Burns. What a conversation today. What does God expect of us? Rich Stern's with us, president of World Vision. What a privilege. Been married for nearly 35 years to his wife, Renee. They have five children, Sarah, Andy, Hannah, Pete, and Grace, and they make their home in Bellevue, Washington. Right before the break, Rich, we were talking about the fact that, there's 15,000 Africans who are going to die today of somewhat preventable diseases. 26,000 children die each day. You have something called awareness, access, and ability to make those statistics actually personal. Talk about that.
Well, one of the challenges in a job like mine at World Vision is how do you deal with these statistics of human suffering? And for most of us, statistics cause our eyes to glaze over. They cause us to be overwhelmed by the magnitude of a problem that we can't possibly grasp. And when you say that more than 26,000 children will die today of preventable causes, you don't know how to process that statistic. And so ultimately, you have to put a face on these statistics and make them come to life for people. But, you know, as I was writing the book, I really got an insight. And we know that the Bible teaches us that the second greatest commandment is to love our neighbors as ourselves. I mean, we learned it in kindergarten, if not before, the golden rule. And we say it over and over, and we almost take it for granted. What does that mean, to love our neighbor as ourselves? And the Lord tells us that it is the second greatest commandment, right after loving the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and strength. He says the second is like it. Well, our neighbor for the last 2,000 years has essentially been the person in our community, in our sphere, at our workplace, on our street, the person that we come into contact with from day to day. We want to love that person as ourselves. We want to treat them with respect and dignity and concern. But about 1950, the definition of who is our neighbor, in my opinion, changed. Because in 1950, for the first time, and I'm picking that year arbitrarily, but it was post-World War II, there was an explosion of mass media, television, radio, newspapers available everywhere, magazines. And for the first time, really, in the history of Christendom, we were able to be painfully aware of what was happening in the lives of Africans and Asians and Latin Americans, and in ways that we had never been aware before. Another thing happened, access. Before 1950, virtually no one traveled internationally. If they did, they might have traveled to Europe on a vacation if they were wealthy enough to afford it. But post-1950, international air travel became affordable and accessible. In 2005, 150 million Americans flew internationally. That's half the population of the United States. So we now have access to the poorest of the poor around the world. And with the explosion of the internet, our awareness, if there's an earthquake in China today, it will be on the internet in minutes. It'll be on the radio and the television. We have 500 channels of cable. So we can no longer say that we're not aware of the plight of the poor. We can no longer say we don't have access. And we also have the ability to do something about it. We have the financial resources, we have the know-how, we have the medical knowledge, we have programs that are tested and effective. So it has revolutionized the second greatest commandment. We now have 6 billion new neighbors.
Wow, that makes so much sense. And yet, so oftentimes we kind of ignore most of those neighbors because we're thinking about how to get through Friday in our own life, or with the economic downturn, we're worried about our jobs and things like that. And yet you gave an illustration, actually it's a chapter, where you talk about 100 jetliners crashing. And that really hit me. Tell us about that.
Well, I want the listener to imagine for a moment. And just recently, we've seen some plane crashes, unfortunately. There was the Miracle on the Hudson, and then the terrible plane crash in Buffalo, New York, where 49, 50 people died, and another plane crash within a week in Amsterdam where people died. And they made global headlines. They were on CNN. They were on all the news channels. They were headlines, front page of all the newspapers of the world. And yet, in Buffalo, 49 or 50 people died. Now, I ask in the book to imagine if tomorrow morning you woke up and the headline was 100 planes have crashed, killing everyone aboard, 26,000 people killed. Can you imagine the media frenzy? Can you imagine the special hearings of Congress? The president would address the nation. The NTSB and the FAA would hold emergency meetings. The governments of the world would come together to try to figure out why this was happening, how it could be prevented. It would be on the news day after day after day. Now imagine if that happened, and then it happened again the next day. 100 more planes crashed, and the next day, and the next day. And the bottom line of all of this is that's exactly what's happening for children in our world. 26,000 children die every day of preventable causes, every day, 365 days a year. But there are no special congressional hearings. There are no headlines across all the newspapers of the world. The governments of the world have not come together to try urgently to prevent this. And most of us have gone about our daily lives without a second thought.
And why do we do that?
Why do we do that? That's the question I've been wrestling with for all the years I've been at World Vision. I think it's because it's not real to us. We don't know those people. We don't know their stories. We haven't seen their faces. And there's something about the way human beings are wired that it has to be personal for us. It has to be personal. And again, Jim, if you went home today and read the newspaper and said there's a famine in Northeast Kenya, lots of people are starving, you might pause as a concerned person and say, that's tragic, you know, and that's a terrible thing. But you'd probably turn the page and move on to the sports section and the TV listings, and you'd go about your daily business. But if you left your house tomorrow morning and found a starving child lying on your doorstep, you wouldn't walk by that child. You would get your wife, you'd call 911, you'd immediately pick that child up and try to get medical attention to that child to save that child's life. You would do whatever it took. You'd be like the parable of the Good Samaritan who found the man beaten by robbers, who bound up the wounds, took the man to an inn, left money for his care. You would do all of those things. Who of us wouldn't? Yeah. But the fact that there are 26,500 of these children every day dying, and we don't know their names, they're not on our front doorstep, it's not personal for us. And so we treat them as statistics. Joseph Stalin said, one death is a tragedy, a million deaths is a statistic. And that's a very telling thing about how we respond as human beings to other human beings. Right. We have to see past the numbers.
You know, it's fascinating when you say that, because that describes it. In your book, you said that 1 billion people live on less than $1 a day. You know, even though we're in an economic downturn, we're 100 times more than that in America, at least 100 times probably. What can the typical family do to make a difference in the life of maybe one child or a couple of children? What can they do?
Well, the first thing you have to believe is that anybody can make a difference, that this is not the work only for governments. It's not the work only of the United Nations or organizations like World Vision, that any person can make a difference, because those 26,000 children that die every day, maybe you can help one of them. Maybe you can help just one. But if that were your child and someone chose to help your child, I mean, can you imagine the joy in your heart that someone cared enough to help? Now, there's all kinds of ways you can help. You can get involved with your legislator and congressman. When a critical bill comes before Congress to fund AIDS money to help orphans and vulnerable children in Africa, to say, I support that bill. I think this is something that we should be using taxpayer dollars for, to care for those children. It could be an appropriation of food to feed people in a hungry country like Zimbabwe. And so we can use the political process to help. So even people in nursing homes can write letters to their congressmen to influence legislation. And I'm told it only takes 10 or 12 letters to a congressman to shape his view on a critical vote that's coming in Congress. But certainly with organizations like World Vision, the decision to sponsor a child, it's about a dollar a day. I mean, how often do you waste a dollar a day? When you go out to McDonald's for lunch, do you buy a Coke? That's more than a dollar. Right. Do you go to Starbucks? That's $3, maybe $4, depending on what you're getting. A dollar a day for most Americans is almost painless, and yet it can change the life of a child through child sponsorship. Kids can do the 30-hour famine and fast for 30 hours and raise money to help hungry kids around the world. Nobody has an excuse to say, I can't do something to help.
Right. You know, and I found personally in our life, sponsoring children, that has been a great thing for our kids. They'll write them letters. They'll actually get little letters back. It helps them identify with this incredible need. We don't have much time left, but about 6 months after the massive 2001 earthquake in India, you were in a car, you're getting ready to come home after a long, grueling time out doing ministry and seeing the needs there. And there was a woman who was carrying a boy. And I want you to take over that story. Yeah.
Well, I'd been on a 10-day trip throughout Asia and Gujarat after the earthquake, and we were leaving the last village on the last day after a very tiring trip. Our cars were beginning to pull out of this village, and a woman ran up to the window of the car and thrust her little son, looked to be about 5 years old, thrust him in the window of the car with a pleading look on her face as if to say, help me, help my child, please help me. Obviously, I looked like a person of influence and stature coming from another country with a big delegation. But the car pulled away, and as the car pulled away, I saw that her little boy had no feet. His feet had been amputated at the ankle. That image stuck in my head. We went back to our hotel in Mumbai. The next morning, we flew back to the States. And a few days later, I couldn't get the image out of my head. I was sharing it with my own family at the dinner table. And I said, I can't get this boy out of my head. And one of my kids said, Dad, why can't you do something about it? You're like the president of World Vision. Why can't you help that boy? And I thought, you know, I was thinking, look, World Vision's helping millions of kids around the world. I can't be responsible for every kid in the world. But God was telling me, Rich, this has to be personal for you. It can't be about a program. It can't be about a massive response to the Gujarat earthquake. It has to be personal. So I sent an email off to India. I said, can you find this kid? I don't know his name. I don't know the name of the village, but it was the last day. Well, a few weeks later, we got an email. We found him. His name is Vikas. His home collapsed on him during the earthquake and crushed his legs. An emergency medical team came from Korea and did a field amputation of his legs to save his life. But we can help him. He needs more surgery and he needs prosthetic limbs, but it will cost $300. Would World Vision US authorize the transfer of that money to help this little boy? We can help him. And I wrote back and I said, no, World Vision will not do this, but Rich Stearns is going to send that $300 to help this boy because this is personal. And a few months later, I got a picture sent over the internet, and I opened it up, and there was little Vikas standing on his new legs for $300. And I just started to weep when I saw that picture. And it hangs in my office today in Seattle as a reminder that every child is precious, and it's personal for every child.
Tears in my eyes, too. Every child is precious, and it's personal. And you know what? You can sponsor a World Vision child. If your family's not doing it, if you don't have a picture, I looked at the picture today of our Hope child up there on the refrigerator. Barely know how to pronounce this kid's name, but it's special in our life and important for our family. I want to encourage you to do the same thing. Roger?
Well, it's important for us to be involved in mission work that's bigger than what we are, and there are so many great relief organizations available that the Christian community can get behind and support. Of course, World Vision is one of them, Compassion International, some of the others. If you'd like to learn more about World Vision, we've got a link on our site today. If you go to homeward.com and look at the radio broadcast archive listing of all the different programs and programmers, as we refer to them. Richard Stearns' name is there. If you click his name, you'll find a link and you can learn more about World Vision. But whatever you do, make sure that you and your kids are being intentional about this. Mom and dad, make sure that you're intentional about spreading this kind of message to your kids and letting them know that we're not here just to be served. We're here to serve. And that's part of the call to Christ, is the call to serve. And we encourage you to be proactive in that. And if there's any resources that we can provide for you to get proactive, check us out online at homeward.com. And now for Dr. Jim Burns, our engineer Ben Camp, and the rest of the staff, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening. Join us again next time right here for another edition of Homeward. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.